The leadership of the parent-teacher organization recently established an agenda for the new school year. Co-chairs Larry Scott and Roberta Cates and Secretary Kate Hawk outlined several major issues, from reducing class size to community schools and improving the city's graduation rates.
One of the concerns I have is that there's momentum, and I think things are moving in the right direction, but we need to make sure that we sustain this momentum. Something like the community schools, there's funding from the state in order to enact the community schools and the programming that goes along with it. If that funding's pulled away, we could see a huge loss there. We need to start advocating to ensure that there are resources and funding that will sustain the programs that have been initiated that will begin this school year.
What about class size?
Class size is a critical issue, especially in terms of the high poverty. And Buffalo Public Schools have begun to address class size at the preschool, kindergarten, and first and second grade levels. As a former teacher, I would really love to see additional monies set aside in the budget to continue to reduce class sizes.
Not only do I think that they need to look at and begin to look at class size and make them, but between 2 years and 9 months and third grade, even though you have 17 kids in a class or maybe 16, you still need two adults. And I'm not saying two teachers. You have teaching assistants who also can help in alleviating some of the problems. So when you have that slower child, for whatever reason, there can be a concentrated effort by one adult while the other adult works with the rest of the class.
And one of your goals, parent and family engagement. How can you improve that? How are you working to improve that as an organization when there are so many parents and guardians that fail to participate in their child education process?
I don't think parents fail to participate. I'm going to give you something that I was told a while ago. Parents are made to feel that they don't need to. That's number one. And I think what the BPTO did was bring that out. We have parents that come to our meetings and are able to discuss a student's problem with another teacher at that same level. Sometimes the advice is given and it works fantastically. We're working to engage those partnerships. And we're working hard at that, and I think we're becoming very successful. And it doesn't necessarily mean that a parent needs to sit in school to be engaged in that child's education. It could mean a whole heap of things, and it's all kinds of ways that you can be engaged.
But what about those children that aren't even getting to school? They're not attending. The kindergarten students that they have to call and say, register your child. There's that whole set of parents that aren't engaged in getting them there.
Let me let you understand something. We have a lot of young babies being raised by great-grandma. Great-grandma, when the bus stop is within a mile and a half and is a mile and a quarter away from her home, it's hard for her to walk that distance. We have to begin to do something about those things too. In the wintertime, I'm sure you don't expect great-grandma to walk that distance. I'm just putting it out there. There are things that the system as we know it, has to put a positive spin on helping with those things that cannot be met. We've got to give a little. We've got to give.
So that more support, that wraparound service that we talk about, it's got to be there.
Right.
I think it's important to recognize, too, that this coming year under the community school model, that there will be four parent centers across the city. Mm-hmm. South Park will have one, Bennett, Lafayette, and East. And I've heard that one of the primary motives this year for the Office of Parent and Family Engagement is not to expect that parents are going to come to them, but to go out to parents, to go to community events, get into the schools. I think it's a huge challenge for all of us, and it's something to reach those parents that aren't engaged, and it's something that as an organization, we can't do alone. We need to partner with the district, partner with other stakeholders, partner with the DPCC, other parent leadership groups, and community leadership groups in order to engage and reach these parents. And we might need to have people knocking on doors, doing home visits, and providing the supports and services that they need that maybe are impacting why they're not engaged and why their child isn't in school.
And one of the things that I like to tell parents is that as kids age, you think you need to become less involved, but in fact, you have to put more effort into that involvement because the communication in elementary school is so spot on that you assume the district is going to continue that. There's a need for parents to be looking for that information, but there's a need for the district to be more responsive and more thinking outside the box about ways of bringing parents in.
And, you know, when you talk about the community schools, and I give them credit, but where I live, all of those community schools are more than 3 miles away. And we have buses in the evening that don't run in our neighborhood. So that leaves a whole void in the middle of the city. And I hope and pray that even though those community schools are where they are, that they begin to bring some of those things into community centers. We have four. Bring them into the community centers. Not all the time, maybe once a month, because then those folks that can't get to the community school where it's located can have an opportunity to meet, greet, and do whatever communications need to happen.
And this goes back to partnership. So In the city, we need a partnership with the NFTA. We need partnerships with transportation. So if you're a parent and you don't own a car, but you have kids at three different schools, so and then the school calls and asks why you're not engaged, well, it's a functioning problem that needs to be addressed.
I want to talk about criteria-based schools and the OCR report because there's been so much controversy surrounding this and still not a resolved issue.
I've spent quite a bit of time reading the OCR and listening to parents. And part of the problem, along with the poverty, which you brought into the conversation, is the systemic racism of this very divided community in which we all live. So it's a structural problem, but it's also a mindset problem. One of the recommendations was a City Honors 2. So, but if you look at what that might look like, that doesn't necessarily mean we'll structure it in order to include more kids of color within a second City Honors. So it's the way that we're looking at what constitutes a good school, what constitutes good teaching, and how all kids can access those. One of the focus items that the board has talked about is improving elementary education across the board in our city so that more kids are prepared to go into high-level critical thinking kinds of structured high schools, regardless of whether they're all academic or maybe they're vocational. But if we expect all kids to go to a high-level high school and we have those high-level high schools available, then we kill all those birds with one stone. We can say, yes, we are addressing the racism problem in our schools where, you know, the majority of those placement seats right now at City Honors anyway do go to white students or Asian students. I think it's a long-term problem, and I wish that the board had adopted all of the recommendations or a majority of the recommendations, but I do know that they're working and they're working on structuring these new high schools, structuring the community high schools, but it comes down to high expectations for all of our students.
I think the district, with the task force that they put together, they have made a huge jump in improving the application process for City Honors and Olmsted. They've eliminated the state assessment. They're going to be using a valid and reliable cognitive and academic assessment that will be used for every single child that is applying to those schools. And you now must be a resident of Buffalo. And there won't be any different process used for private school kids, which had been done in the past and was a major, major concern. There also will be any kid that takes the test will immediately be applied or put into the application pool for those schools. In the past, there was an application process for the parents and teachers, former teachers, that had to get involved in. And a lot of times that paperwork was not completed or not submitted or lost. And so those kids were automatically denied access. That has been eliminated. I still think there needs to be major improvement, like Kate mentioned, in as far as increasing students of color, especially at City Honors. It's still very disproportionate. Something even I think Sam Radford has suggested is that you have students of color that are just on the cusp of entering those schools or meeting the criteria. And maybe if we looked at a few of those students and revising some of the criteria so that we do increase the amount of students of color at City Honors in particular, I think that's something to consider.
My thought on the whole thing, I agree with Kate about City Honors too. However, the four new high schools?
Five
new high schools that open, if they have the challenging curriculum that they say that they have, I think a lot of kids would go where they're interested. Mm-hmm. City Honors at one point was the only school that offered any kind of alleviation out toward. But, you know, sometimes people have a bigger faith in City Honors than what's really there. And if you're still not a strong parent, your kid gets lost at City Honors. And I'm just putting it out there. It doesn't matter whether you're black, white, green, or orange. You have to be a strong parent. But you have to be a strong parent no matter where your child goes to high school. And if you push it forward, you continue to push it forward, your child could be successful in any school. And that's just my own personal feeling, but they can be successful anywhere. And with the new high schools, it's giving you an opportunity. And those can also be award-winning high schools. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily mean because we've opened it up to everybody that doesn't happen. It should happen. They should be challenged, as Kate said, and they all can be award-winning. Once those all become award-winning, top of the line, there would be no need for a City Honors 2, and it all spreads out all over the place.
Are you pleased with those new schools and what each has a different component that they're working toward?
I'm pleased with them at this point. I have concerns about East, okay, being a community school, the way it was set up. Not offering forensics when that's part of law enforcement and they had the lab. So I've got some concerns, but I think that over the years, parents will look up and say, okay, this is fine, but we have to add more.
I think part of that problem, too, is that with something like forensics, which is very specific, mm-hmm. we need to find high-quality teachers who can mm-hmm. teach some of these mm-hmm. new wave curriculums and also can build a rapport with high school students. So that's kind of a unique situation.
Another thing that your goals have set out, you talk about advocate for improved district policies. So often we hear of these resolutions that they're voting on as the board. And, you know, we see some of the disparity and things that happen with the board. But the parents aren't really a part of that process as well, or they don't understand kind of the backdrop of what's happening. Larry, where do you begin to work with them to develop a better kind of communication process through that?
My first response to that is I think if we leave the board put the board to the side, under Dr. Cash's leadership, I think his team has found a way to be inclusive and to reach out to parents, especially the parent leadership organizations. So when there is an initiative, they will form a focus group that will include stakeholders for input and maybe for suggestions moving forward. And I think he has kind of developed an approach that is inclusive and trying to engage parents and their input. And I think the board needs to maybe see that and also replicate that. I think over the past few years, the board has been a little more attentive to the parent voice and just the public voice in general. And I think that's a credit to the organization of our group and others coming together and really putting pressure on the board and on the district to be inclusive of the public voice, especially parents.
There are board members who are responsive. I know Dr. Harris-Tigg has she just started sending me a newsletter. So those are the kinds of interactions that we want to promote. We recently signed on with Sam McGavern's Partnership for Public Good. So the idea that Buffalo is experiencing this renaissance has to include education. Mm-hmm. So all stakeholders have to be involved in talking with each other and improving education for the good of the entire city. Mm-hmm. But I think with the new board seated, we're looking forward in a positive manner. We're really excited about engaging with the board and the parents and the community.
You expect to see progress?
I do expect. You know what? I'm so hopeful. And I see, because I've been through the Supper but Equal all the way through till now, which took us through magnet schools, which took us through, you know, it took us through everything. So when I say I've been involved with the Buffalo Public Schools for over 50 years, I can definitely say when I started school, it was 1959. So my whole thing is that I think that it's time to turn it around, and it's time to, we did have a successful stay during the 70s. It was very successful that now in China, they're using our model in China nationally, and they're having more than enough success. Why didn't we keep the model and keep on moving forward? But we didn't, because as funding died, they took the programs away. So I'm thinking that we're coming back. We've learned that lesson. We can't allow that to happen again. So if you're going to change leadership, because when we change leadership in this city, the whole dynamics of the school system change. We have to learn that that can no longer happen.
I know your organization came out in support of the draft proposal for the gender identity. Your thoughts on that? This is not a new issue, but yet it's taking the forefront both here in our area and across the nation. Why isn't a policy in place? Why hasn't there been a policy in place?
Well, I think it's important to note, which I learned the other day, is that what's in this policy is happening in our Buffalo schools, and it's been happening for several years. So every year there are transgender students in our schools that are being accommodated. They are being allowed to use the bathrooms and the locker rooms that fits their gender identity. And also important to note is that in looking back at records, there has never been any incident of sexual assault or abuse or misbehavior by a transgender student. So there's a lot of fear about what could happen, but there's evidence there to show that these students exist. They have a right to exist, and they need to be treated with dignity. And under state and federal law, it's time for this district to enact a policy that upholds those rights and the dignity that they deserve.
There was quite an outburst from parents at the second public hearing that was held at the Meriwether Library. They just didn't seem to feel that they were part of enough of the process, that it was moving too fast.
I think there are a few, maybe three or four parents who very much wanted to get their views across, and it was very unfortunate that many other parents who were there were not able to speak because of that. And I think that a culture of fear has been generated around this issue. But to me and to my BPTO partners, this boils down to respect for student, each individual student. So I have an 11th grader who was involved in a social justice book club last summer, and he came home and taught me more about gender identification than I've ever learned from any adult. So we need to respect and respond to our children and our teenagers. They know what's going on in their schools. And this, to me, this also equates with the idea of culturally responsive teaching, language responsive, and now gender responsive. If teachers and staff and administrators know their students, know where they come from, know what they think, you know, talk to them on a daily basis. Each student can be addressed and their needs can be addressed on an individual basis. If we have supportive administrative staff and teachers who are trained to see students in that humanistic way.
I also think, I had a niece at that meeting who beelined it to my house afterwards. And she was incensed because her thing is, I guess she's close to 40 now. This has been in effect since she was in the sixth grade that she knows of. She had surgery, major surgery, left a long scar on her. And they came and said, you don't have to dress in the dressing room. We've set a room aside. And her thing was, you know, Auntie, if they came to me then, I know that this, when I read the policy, they're not hearing these are taken on an individual basis. They're not hearing that boys just can't come to school one day dressed in a girl's dress and go into a bathroom and rape a bunch of girls. They're not hearing all of that. And I said, how can we do this? She says, you need to get the BPTO to have a meeting and explain the whole policy. What she thought was going to happen is that there would be somebody that the policy helped over a lifetime. She was one of those people. And her thing is, it's all kind of reasons why kids have to be removed from the, want to be removed. And it's taken on the individual. Her thing is why is it called gender identity?
Yes, it's really personal, cultural,
right.
Social identity. Mm-hmm. Because we have students, girls and boys, who may be uncomfortable for whatever reason, mm-hmm. whether it's a surgery, whether it's a religious issue, right. Who want to be, you know, they don't want to be in the general public in the mm-hmm. locker room, okay? As long as our administrative and staff and teachers can address those issues on an individual basis, mm-hmm. then each kid is honored. Mm-hmm.
And as you said, it's been quietly happening for
right,
years.
Right.
It's just become kind of the hot topic right now of what's happening. Any final thoughts before we close out from all of you of what you hope to accomplish for the new school year and years to come and why you continue to give yourself to this effort too?
I've been completely inspired by my experience with BPTO and in Buffalo schools. I've been in multiple buildings. I've met so many different people, so many good things going on with the teachers, the aides, teaching assistants, parents, and students. We're going to continue to highlight what is going well, celebrating the good things that are going on in all of our Buffalo schools. At the same time, working to improve and change what's not working so well so that all of our students are getting the best education that they deserve.
And I would just like to put in a plug to any parent or guardian out there who's interested in joining the BPTO. We meet on the third Saturday, mostly the third Saturday at East High School from 9 to 11. Breakfast is before the meeting. We would love to have you come. We have specific committees that we're looking for membership for. I'm personally the chair of the education committee, where we look at education policy and in a social justice lens. And I would love to have people contacting us to join, because we need more engaged parents across the board. And public school is for everybody. And we really want that to continue and to strengthen.
I stay involved because I really am a community activist, but I stay involved because I'm the one that walks the six seniors that have graduated who were not accepted or not applied to college. I walk them to college and get them registered. I'm involved because I think education helps you in so many ways. And my father used to say, what you got in your brain, nobody can take that away. They can take a lot of things away, but once you learn it, they can't take it. So keeping that all in mind, and I just think that education is so important. And I think it's a right of every child to have the best education they can. And I'm for public schools to remain open, and I'm for them being the best the best that they can be at all levels. And yes, I visit some elementary schools, some high schools, and I volunteer in them. And I think that that's important. And yes, I'm a guardian of an MST student. So I look at that as always being a favorable situation, no matter how the child moves. But you have to keep them involved in understanding everything is a learning tree, part of the learning tree for them. And they have to look at it in that light.
Well, thank you all for sharing your expertise and your passion for the children of Buffalo. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Eileen.
Thanks, Eileen.
We've been talking with Buffalo Parent Teacher Organization leaders Larry Scott, Roberta Cates, and Kate Hawk. Eileen Buckley, WBFO News.